Good evening, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening, talking to you from the very sunny south side Bethlehem for a change. Happy first day of spring. Tonight on our program, we're doing something that has become a tradition here on my show for Women's History Month. We're talking to Carmen Ambar Twilley Ambar, from Cedar Crest College, and getting an update and talking about where they're going and where they're heading. Let me first bring you into some perspective about Cedar Crest before I have this conversation with Carmen, because some of you may not realize the scope of Cedar Crest College. It's one of the top women's colleges in the U.S. Founded in 1867, it has about 1,400 students from 29 states and 30 countries. Has an 84-acre campus that's nationally registered as an arboretum with 130 species of trees. The student-to-faculty ratio is 10 to 1 with an average class size of 20. Its mascot is the Falcon. And Cedar Crest has been recognized as a top-value, top-regional college by U.S. News & World Report and on the Forbes list. It's been the among the top 10 women's colleges. And as I said, for the past 5 years, almost since Carmen came to the college, we've been sort of keeping track of what's going on and what's happening at Cedar Crest at our very special women's college here in the Lehigh Valley. We've shared strategic direction. We've talked about SAGE, which is the adult learning. We've talked about some of their global connectivity and women's leadership and the Masters of Art Therapy, and tonight is no different. We're going to be talking about and getting an update on some of these items, but we're going to learn what's coming. And so, Carmen, welcome.
Thanks, Sally. I'm glad to be back. It's fun.
I'm so happy you're here. And when we did a sort of a pre-session, listeners, Carmen and I just got so engaged that the time went so fast. So I know that tonight you're going to get a lot of information, and we're probably not going to get through everything we'd like to get through. So stay tuned. Don't turn that radio dial. And let me introduce Carmen to you if you have not heard of her, which I think is probably impossible in the Lehigh Valley because she's been out and about. But she's a graduate of Georgetown and Princeton Universities and Columbia School of Law. And prior to coming to us here at Cedar Crest, she was nationally known for her accomplishment in higher education, in particular her commitment to women's education. And just prior to Cedar Crest, she was dean of Douglas College at Rutgers University, where she was the youngest dean in the university's history. And the other thing that she keeps me updated on when we meet is her 7-year-old triplets. How are they doing?
They're doing great. They'll be 7 on April 19th. They're very excited about their birthday. So we're going to go to New York City and see Matilda. That's what they're really excited about right now. So they're
having fun. Great. Okay, so the business of higher education. Our show is about business, and there's been a lot of struggles in higher education.
That's true.
Reading the graduation rate, the college incoming rate has all changed dramatically. What's going on, and how's Cedar Crest working through this?
You know, I think it's a really great time for Cedar Crest, but it's in a challenging environment. And some of you may have read an op-ed that I did in the Morning Call several weeks ago, but I talked about the changing landscape of higher education. And so, you know, if you just want a sort of a quick rundown of what the big issues are, there are a declining number nationwide of high school students nationally. And that number is not expected to rebound until about 2024.
Wow, so 10 years
from
now.
So 10 years from now. And with that national decline, Pennsylvania has a deeper decline, 10% more than the national average in this decline, because in Pennsylvania, we have sort of an aging population. We have the challenge of competition from for-profit colleges and mm-hmm. from online providers, so that's certainly a challenge. We are facing the challenge of people questioning the return on investment of a college education, the cost of the education. And so people are sort of saying, how do I afford to go to college, and wondering whether that investment fully pays off. So that's certainly a challenge. And then we have an expanding population that's not typically in our wheelhouse. So adult students, transfer students. People asking for their education to be delivered in a different way. So all of those challenges, I think, have been really impacting all colleges nationwide. And I think they're particularly challenging for small private colleges and for colleges like Cedar Crest that have a relatively small endowment and are tuition dependent. Mm-hmm. And for us, that means that, you know, our business model works when students choose us. And 83% of our sort of revenue is based on tuition. And so we really have to be, you know, the phrase that I've been using that's just so different for colleges to use, but mission, market, and margin, right? And that's really kind of a business way of thinking about the world. But, you know, we have spent the last 4 or 5 years thinking about our mission, thinking about what our market is, and thinking about what our margin is. And we're not a for-profit institution. But we have to make our business model work in order to be a thriving and vibrant institution. And so we can't make decisions that don't have an aspect of the business model in mind.
Right.
And so when you look at what's been happening at Cedar Crest, and kind of just if you probably pulled up each of these interviews and just went through them over the past 5 years, you will see that our academic program expansion, that our focus on our mission, that our focus on our market has all been about making that business model work. And I think we've been successful. I think we are sort of strategically stepping through it, but it is a challenging environment. There's no doubt about that.
One of the things as I was looking through the annual report that we had just discussed is SAGE, which is the adult education component, has now, after only like 3 years, become 40% of your student base.
It's true. Well, Cedar Crest, you know, has had a long commitment to adult students, so we built on that tradition. But it is, when you look at who the people are who are returning to college in the largest numbers, they are adults. Returning to either get a new bachelor's degree or a bachelor's degree that they didn't get before, a new certificate, a new graduate degree. And so if you want to expand your enrollment, that is really a key area of focus. And so Cedar Crest has spent some significant time focused on our School of Adult and Graduate Education. We've expanded our graduate programs over the course of the last several years. So we launched a master's in art therapy. We lost a master's in fine art and creative writing. We've put one of our graduate programs fully online, the Master's in Education. And, you know, when I come here year after year, I'm sure you'll hear me talk about additional graduate programs. And then we've also made sure that the expansions that we've made in our undergraduate program, both for the Women's College and for SAGE, that they are programs that are applied programs. Mm-hmm. And they have an applied focus. And that is going to be the way that we build this institution. And it's not that we're abandoning our liberal arts college foundation. You know, that is who we are, and our general education requirements are going to be grounded in the liberal arts. But where you see expansions, they're going to be in programs with an applied piece to them, because that helps parents recognize the return on their investment.
Okay.
Because they can see a career opportunity for their student, mostly young women, a few young men.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Versus another 4 years of education or
right.
something to
right.
fine-tune that.
Right.
Well, you had mentioned, I think it was either in the op-ed piece or maybe the literature mm-hmm. I've been reading, but just the greater importance on a liberal arts degree that someone graduates with, because the world of business, the world of employment is changing so dramatically.
Right.
The only consistent is some of the basic skills you learn through your liberal arts background.
Right. It's interesting. So you kind of have this dual piece coming together. As people are questioning the value of the liberal arts, our response is that grounding in the liberal arts is critically important. So I do this thing at our admissions events every year, every time we do them. And I talk about, I just ask everybody to pull out their smartphones. And I say, you know, you realize that over the past 6 years, a whole industry has been created just through that little thing that you have in your hand. And I use the triplets as an example. Didn't really exist before they were born. Now here they are, going to be 7 years old, and the whole new industry has been created. So what we're obligated to do is, yes, to help students understand their discipline, but also prepare them for the inevitable change that will happen in their career. And that's what the liberal arts does for you, because it's critical thinking skills, writing skills, cultural competency skills. And I say to them that I guarantee you that over the course of your student's life, they will probably not only change careers and change employers, they will change industries,
mm-hmm.
right?
Correct.
And so they need to have a broad base of skills. So, yes, you'll walk in the room and you'll have students say, I know what I want to major in. But I say to them, that's great. And we will help you prepare you for that disciplinarily. And that's important. But you also have to have a grounding that prepares you for inevitable change.
Yeah. One of the things that we had talked about, and you had referenced it, was sort of the online and working online. And I noticed that you've sort of changed in your approach to online and now offer something that's called small private online classes.
Yes.
Can you help our audience understand what that means versus the larger base?
Right. So, you know, there's been a lot of conversations. The phrase that the audience may have heard is MOOCs, mm-hmm. and those are massive online courses. And this has been kind of the way that people have been thinking about online education. And so that's a course with 15,000 people in it. And what we've said at Cedar Crest is that, but that's not in keeping with our mission and who we are as an institution. And what we really believe in are SPOCs, small private online courses that keep that intimate relationship with the faculty member, 10, 15 students, but you still get that engagement that you might get if you were sitting in the physical room with that faculty member, but you're doing it in the online format. And that's really in keeping, I think, mm-hmm. with who we are. Mm-hmm. And so what you see happening at Cedar Crest is an expansion of SPOCs. Okay. And so we've created several fully online programs. So we now have a fully online business program. We now have a fully online master's in education. We now have a fully online RN to BSN. In the fall of this year coming up, 2014, our criminal justice program will be fully online. Our psychology program will be fully online. And we've also spent some time working with our faculty to make sure that they can deliver the online experience in the Cedar Crest way. And so most of our faculty have gotten trained in a program called Quality Matters, which helps faculty members deliver the best sort of online experience. So I think it'll be an interesting way of thinking about what it means to be in an online format. And for those of us who are used to that in-class experience, you know, one of the things that can be interesting about being in the online format is that the faculty member can see how much you've been on reading a document. They can see that you can't just be a face back there that doesn't answer the question, because in the online format, they're going to say, Sally, can you please respond to this? And so you're going to have to type your response. It's interesting. You can also have exchanges with your colleagues in a different way. So there are some real, you know, benefits to having that online format. And I think it'll be interesting over time. I think there'll be students at Cedar Crest that will come for the on the ground sort of traditional experience. There'll be people who will float back and forth mm-hmm. between the online format. And then I hope and believe there'll be somebody in California who will be taking our fully online program and won't necessarily have been to Allentown and see our wonderful campus, but will be deeply connected to Cedar Crest because they'll get a wonderful degree from our institution.
So with the small online, you don't have to come to campus for anything. You could maybe come, but you don't have to.
Right. So if you're in the fully online program, for us, that means that every aspect of that program you can take online.
Okay.
And so that could be a person who's in Vermont or in California that wants to do that fully online program. But there will be students who will be on Cedar Crest campus that will be in our business program and will take the majority of their courses on the ground, but might take one online course.
Okay.
And so they'll be able to go in and out of the online format. So I think that's the way that a place like Cedar Crest can contribute to the arena of online education. And I hope and believe that people will feel, because I believe this is true, that longstanding institutions like Cedar Crest, we've been around almost 150 years, we'll be 150 years old in a couple of years, that they will trust and believe the quality of our academic experience because we're longstanding providers of a quality education.
Yeah. And you're also, in my mind, based on the last several years, you're a lot of leading edge with some of the things you're doing, like the transfer policy.
Right.
Because you're very open and accepting.
Right. Well, I think what we decided on the transfer policy, and we got, I have to say, I was just surprised a little bit how much the community colleges thanked us for that change. And really viewed it as a sign of respect for the work that they did. So when I was out in the community, I would get community college staff members and advisors saying, thank you for respecting our work. And so what we said was, if you have an associate's degree from a community college, that we will fully accept those transfer credits and that we won't ask you to do anything extra to meet our general education requirements, and you can go right into your major field. Now, you may have some requirements in your major, obviously, that you have to finish up. But in terms of your general ed, we will accept those transfer credits. And, you know, the outpouring of just support we got from community colleges, I was honestly surprised by it because I didn't know it was going to be such a validation to them of the work that they do. And we have a significant number of transfers. That is an expanding population. There are a lot of reasons why people go to community colleges, not the least of which is sometimes cost.
Right, affordability.
Affordability. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so in our view, when we're talking about ensuring that this return on investment is worth it, we're saying, yes, we understand. Some students may want the full 4-year experience, but some students may want a 2-year experience, and we want to make that easy for them.
Well, and another thing that you've just introduced to me, which is, again, is leading edge, is this 4-year guarantee program.
Yeah.
And help us understand what that means to an undergraduate, maybe to their parents.
So it's interesting. You know, we have been named, as you mentioned, the last 3 years in U.S. News and World Report, a top regional college and a top value. And we really took that seriously, that they suggested that this was a great investment. And we said, how can we continue to demonstrate to our families that this investment is worth it? And one of the things we said is that we need to guarantee that they can complete this degree in 4 years and that they can do it and still take advantage of an internship or research opportunities or study abroad. So this entering class will be the first class that's under the 4YG guarantee.
Okay.
And they have some obligations. Now they have to register on time. They have to follow the advice of their advisor. They can't just withdraw from courses willy-nilly. They have to be diligently moving towards the completion of their degree. But if they do all those things, then we guarantee them that they can complete their degree in 4 years. And if for any reason an advising mistake happens or we cancel a course that they need, we're saying to them that we'll foot the bill for that, that you don't have to pay extra because we've made a mistake. And I think for
That's
us,
nice.
I think for us, we were saying, hey, you know, this is an important time in their life, but we know it costs a lot to go to college. And you can get this experience in 4 years if you do what we suggest you do. And I have to say that parents have been at our admissions events just nodding their heads in appreciation, because it certainly is true. You know, one of the things that's happening at a lot of colleges, and it's tough for our state institutions, but with, you know, the loss of state funding and other things, they've had to cut classes. And so oftentimes students will be in institutions and they need this class, but it's just not being offered.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's taking them 5 years, 6 years, 7 years to finish, not because they're not diligent, but because the courses aren't there for them. And we said, yeah, we can help. We can help make this be viable. And so that's what the 4YG is. If you go on Cedar Crest campus now, you'll see our admissions counselors walking around with little buttons say, ask me about 4YG. And I think that it's going to be an important part of how we think about our student population in the future.
Yeah, I can't imagine that most parents wouldn't be very appreciative of having that opportunity. Listeners, we're going to be taking a short break, but stay tuned. We're going to have Carmen back and talking about some of the programs that they've done this past year abroad and some new ones they're introducing in the fall and civic engagement. So we've got a lot of things to talk about, so make sure you just stay tuned. We'll be right back.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem's South Side, presenting Journey, Dream of the Red Pavilion, the first of two productions in Touchstone's initiative, Journey from the East, investigating the history of Chinese immigration in the Lehigh Valley, April 3rd through the 13th. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
Our spring membership drive runs April 4th through the 12th. Once again, you have the opportunity to buy back several on-air pledge days. Visit WDIY.org and make your donation today. If we raise $15,000 by April 3rd, we will push back the start of our pledge drive by 3 days. That will give us a pledge-free weekend. Supporting WDIY is quick, easy, and safe. Log on to WDIY.org, make your donation today, and enjoy more of the programs you love on WDIY. Thanks.
And listeners, we're back. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. And as you probably are well aware, this is Women's History Month. And here at Lehigh Valley Discourse on 88.1 FM, WDIY, we've made a tradition of catching up with what's happening at our very favorite women's college, which is Cedar Crest College. And with me this evening is Carmen Twilley Ambar. She's the president of Cedar Crest College. And we were talking before the break about some of the new programs, the guarantees and the transfer acceptances that Cedar Crest has sort of been on the leading edge for in this area. And another area is some new majors that they're going to be introducing this fall. And so, Carmen, share with our listeners some of the new programs that are coming out this fall, which I think are terrific.
So we're really excited about the fact that we are launching a suite of healthcare-related majors. And so those majors will be in public health, exercise science, health and wellness and promotion, and health sciences. So if you're thinking about the health sciences, think about anybody who's pursuing physical therapy, occupational therapy, all of those types of areas. They'll be in the health sciences and exercise science, of course, is people sort of are familiar with that. Wealth promotion is interesting, health and wellness promotion. So some of you now are connected with insurance companies, corporations. All of us are talking to people who promote health and well-being. And this is an expanding market and an expanding profession. So people who are interested in that will be in that area. And of course, public health, which we all know is a needed and important area. So we will be launching all four of those majors in the fall. And we will be hiring a chair of that department. So it will be its own department at Cedar Crest. Fantastic. And I think it's an important thing for the listeners to know that we're really building on historic strength at Cedar Crest in terms of, you know, Cedar Crest is really known for the sciences in general. But many of you know that we have a very strong nursing program, nutrition program, biology, forensic science program. We have a master's in nursing. So we have had a longstanding strength in the sciences and in health in general. And so it seemed natural to us to expand in this area. But I also think, you know, back to the business piece of it, Sally, that we spent a lot of time looking at the labor market. And so we did our own analysis of the labor market in this area and in Pennsylvania. And we looked at the fastest growing majors, fastest growing
industries.
Mm-hmm. And healthcare is of the top 25, is half of those top 25 growing majors. And of course, you know, anybody familiar with the Valley knows what our healthcare industry looks like here. It's our number one industry. So it just seemed natural, right, that this is an area of expansion for our area. This is an area of expansion for enrollment for Cedar Crest. And it's a historic strength for our college. So it didn't take much after that quick review to know that this was an important area for us. So we will see the sort of first fruits of that, probably not this year, but next year, because those programs were just approved. But we, if you're on our website, you will see a posting for the chair in that role. So we're excited about bringing new leadership there. And then we will be on our way with these programs. And I have no doubt that this set of majors will be another set of fast-growing majors for Cedar Crest. When we launched art therapy, in 18 months, it became the fastest-growing major at Cedar Crest.
Really?
And it did, yes. It went in 18 months. It's the fastest growing major that we have. And then, you know, this past year, this fall, we just launched the master's degree.
Right, right.
And we had a waiting list for that. So, you know, we've been hitting the hot ones recently. But I think I believe it's because we're being strategic. We're trying to build on historic strengths. We're trying to be thoughtful about what our area needs and what's important. And then we've tried to find a way to be responsive to what people say they really want in careers and in opportunities. And I think all of those things have played into our successes in these new areas.
Plus, you're building on your strengths and your approach to education.
Yeah. I think that's important.
Yeah, you sort of have that consistent
value
there.
Right, and I think that we have been known, you know, I'm not sure this is the right phrase, but this is what we use, you know, internally, sort of helping professions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some of these areas are in keeping with that strength. I think the other thing we've tried to do is to have cohorts so that you have students who are in professions that are not the same but relate to each other. And so there's a cohort connection. And I think the students who come into these areas will have a cohort feeling, right? I might be in exercise science and you might be in public health, but we're here together taking the same statistics class.
Right.
And I think that that's going to also create what I think we're known for at Cedar Crest, which is a strong community, a support system that encourages students to be the best that they can be. We have high expectations of success and leadership, but you need a cohort of people who believe in you. And it's not just the administrative staff or the faculty. It's also your friends and colleagues, too. And I think that that's been something that is an important part of who we are as an institution.
Well, it almost sounds to me when you're describing this that you're building the foundation for teamwork as they go through school between all levels. So whether you're in management, whether it's your peers, whether it's your subordinates, as you
right,
get out, you've
right.
developed that team approach.
And part of what we hope to create in that cohort model is an opportunity for collaborative work across disciplines. So you'll see when you're on our website of how we're building those courses, there will be multiple opportunities for people in different majors to be in courses together. And then as they get to the sort of major areas, then they'll sort of split off into their
right.
disciplinary areas. So it was we pulled some majors off and added some majors in our own thinking to make that cohort model work.
Wow. Well, and, you know, you've demonstrated that in some of your living situations. And also, you know, and one of the things I want to commend Cedar Crest on is the community leadership that you encourage among your students to get them out there and understanding what's going on in real life
right.
outside the campus. It's tremendous to have that type of energy available to the community.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When we did our strategic plan, and I have to say that, you know, that strategic plan was important. It sort of built our broad principles and what we value as an institution. And so one of our broad principles is civic engagement. And we spend time thinking about how we're delivering on that. And so we've drawn to us who we are, which is students who believe in getting engaged in the community. We do over 20,000 hours of community service every year. And we're always on the U.S. President's Honor Roll for our community service. That's just, you know, we'd all be devastated if we didn't make it, you know, because that's who we are. Oh, we'd be just, oh, my God, what happened?
Students, are you listening?
Yeah, that's right. No, get out there and serve the community. But I think what we do is we demonstrate it's a value from the moment they first step on campus. So in our orientation, we dedicate a whole day to community service. Everybody gets up early in the morning. We're all wearing our Cedar Crest T-shirts. Our director of community service, Tammy Bean, has assigned us all to various community service sites. And faculty and staff and students go out together and we get engaged in our community. And we stay there all day and work with community folks. And people who are listening who know Cedar Crest, they've seen us out there doing that. And what happens is that students get connected to some of those organizations. Mm-hmm. Then we have a course called Ethical Life. That has in it a requirement for community service. And so students then go out as a group in a course and work in organizations and do community service. And then we have a day that just faculty and staff get together and do community service. So it becomes a cultural norm,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And we believe that, you know, we talk a lot about Cedar Crest being a place where women learn to lead. But leadership is service. And so helping them understand that part of leadership is an important part of who we are. And I have to say that I think students get so much out of that experience, so much personal growth, but so much of an opportunity to learn this city and to learn Allentown and Bethlehem and Easton and try to get connected in the community. And I believe they're also out there helping. And I think the organizations who have our students just so appreciate the work that they do and the value that they bring to their community efforts.
Well, it's always, from a nonprofit standpoint, it's always nice to get sort of fresh new thoughts, new energy. It helps to reinvigorate your staff.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And our students love it. They really do. They enjoy doing it.
Right. And listeners, I don't know whether you caught the name or not, but Tammy Bean is the director of community services. And is she the person that if a nonprofit would say, hey, I'd like to get on that list with Cedar Crest?
A- Absolutely. And I think Tammy's always looking for interesting new places for our students to get connected to. So if you want our students to be involved, and remember, they can be involved on a one-day basis, a one-week basis, a semester, a year. So there's all sorts of ways for students to get involved in your organization. So you don't have to only have a one-time, one-off experience. Right. You can have someone that comes and does a consistent project for you. And having worked in the nonprofit world most of my career, I know sometimes you need someone that's going to be there consistently over the course of a semester or a year. And we also have a lot of organizations that just hand the project off to the next group of students, right? They have a group of students that worked that year, and then they know they're going to get their Cedar Crest students next year, and they just hand off the project in the same way that scientists hand off the next research path to the next group of students.
Terrific. As you're looking at sort of attracting and building and doing things, I mean, in the business world today, as you've indicated, you know, things have changed so dramatically in the 7 years as far as technology and the impact and how you do things. And when we were talking prior to the show, you talked a little bit about the digital marketing that Cedar Crest is now doing to get that message out there. I was fascinated by what you're doing and you're taking.
This is interesting. I mean, we're in our second full year of a very intensive digital marketing campaign. And I've learned a lot about digital marketing that I didn't know that much about. But your listeners know that sometimes you're on the web and you look up something, and then, you know, you're on there the next day and that ad seems to follow you. And you know, oh, gosh, yes, I was looking at shoes, and now here I am seeing this shoe ad again. So we spent some time with some folks in New York City in particular, but also our own local folks, making sure that we had a grasp on that digital marketing experience. And so, you know, you will see banner ads, you will see digital ads on Pandora and on Spotify and on all of the sort of areas where young women are listening to their music. On special websites, you will see Cedar Crest banner ads. And so we spent a lot of time targeting our digital market so that we reach both the students and parents. And one of the things that's been interesting is that when I first got to Cedar Crest, you know, we had some billboards up and some other things. And I'm not saying billboards are not great. They are. But one of the things I jokingly say to our faculty sometimes and to our staff is that if you're seeing the ad, that's a problem because you're not our target market, you know. So, in some ways, I think, you know, when you're at an institution like Cedar Crest, you kind of want the validation of seeing it around. Mm-hmm. But, you know, most of our staff and faculty are not 17-year-old girls.
Right.
So
I wish it at times.
Yeah, yes. And so we need to go where they are. And most of us who have young children and anyone who's in the teenage years knows that they're on their smartphones, they're on their tablets, they're on the web. They are getting digital advertisement as the way they think about how to make decisions. And so I feel like we're right there where we need to be. Even our website, if listeners will go onto our website, they'll see that our Unleashed campaign, which is how we began our digital marketing campaign with the SHE in Unleashed bolded to help people sort of think about us as a women's college, was just a very different campaign. So you'll see a young woman on there with a bow and arrow.
Right.
And that was about appealing to, you know, a Hunger Games type young woman, right? And so we have to meet our customers, our consumers, where they are. And so if you have a daughter who's 17 or 16 years old, if you pull up her Pandora, you're probably hearing Cedar Crest. If you pull up Spotify, you're probably hearing Cedar Crest. But it's been an interesting time. And the honing in on that target market and where they are is challenging.
It is.
And so, you know, I've spent a lot of time thinking about pay-per-click and all sorts of things that I never thought I'd be talking about. But that's where I think the space is for colleges like Cedar Crest.
Do you find any other colleges in that same space with you?
I think there are. I mean, I think that we're all getting savvier about this. And so you do see other colleges there. But I think that over time, that's going to be where we spend where everybody is.
Yeah.
Because that's where the students are and that's where they're thinking. And I think you're going to see segmentation. in a different way. You know, we're having to think, and that's why I think it's so great to be on this show, because I do think sometimes people don't think of institutions of higher education as businesses. But some of the things we're thinking about are exactly the way, you know, an average business would think about reaching potential customers.
Right.
And think about it. You know, the investment in your college education may be one of the largest investments you make in your life.
Absolutely.
You know, your house, car, college. I mean, which one is the larger investment?
Well, and which one is the one that's going to help you attain the others?
Absolutely. And so this is a big decision
yeah.
that people have to make. And we have to be savvier in helping them make that right decision.
Well, as we've talked about, you know, running the school and everything that's going on, and this year, how are you finding things? What has been the most rewarding aspect now as you're looking back and you know, all the accomplishments? I mean, it's been wonderful. And I have to commend you. You know, I've not spoken to someone who has taken the strategic plan and worked it the way I'm seeing you and your team at Cedar Crest do it. So kudos to you guys. You're really...
You know, it's been interesting you say that. You know, so one of the things we said when we first did that strategic plan, and that was really a community effort, we said this is not going to be a document that collects dust on a shelf. Mm-hmm. And this is not going to be one of those ones you pick up and say, what happened with that strategic plan? And I think we have tried to work it with enough flexibility to change. So we had 22 initiatives in that strategic plan. I think we've accomplished 14 of the initiatives so far. But I think there will be some in there that we won't do, that we've moved to different areas and said, hey, that's not quite the way to go. But we have tried to work that plan because it's built on who our core selves. And I think that that's been an important part of what we've done. So the most interesting thing, you know, the truth of the matter is it's been more challenging than I thought it would be. And I think part of that is because as I began, I began in July or August of 2008, and if people can think back to that time, the financial crisis mm-hmm. hit about 4 or 5 months later. And so the kind of honeymoon...
Oh, that was a short one.
Yeah, and the ease with which you could say, well, let's think about, you know, I didn't have that type of time and space right. to do that. So I think it's been, and we've had a reshaping of higher education. The way I've described it is, watch what has happened in healthcare over the past 20 years. We're having that same sort of seismic shift in
but
higher
faster.
Education. But faster.
Yeah.
So it's been more challenging than I thought it would be. I think the thing that's been the most rewarding is that I think sometimes people hear small private college and they think elite and they think wealthy and they think kind of easy street. And here's what the Cedar Crest student profile looks like. 29.5% of our entering class was first-generation college students. The median income of our entering class this last year was $55,000 a year.
Oh.
So these families are making a tremendous investment in this experience. And the most rewarding thing is to watch a young woman change not only her own career trajectory, but her family's career trajectory. Because she is maybe the first person in her family to go to college. And so when I get a chance to see them walk across stage every year at graduation, and because it's a small college and I know many of them personally, I know their struggles, I know their journey, and I'm just so happy for them when they come that through that little line where I shake their hand, because I know what we've been able to do to help, and I know what they've been able to do to make a difference, and I know they're going out to change the world, and they're doing so while their own personal lives have been changed and that they've transformed their family's lives. And that is just wow. the most rewarding thing ever. It's just you can't help but be excited about it.
Yeah, that's incredible. Listeners, we're going to take one more break during the show, so stay tuned. We have a very special program that we're going to talk about in the next part of this. So this is Sally Hanlon on WDIY 88.1 FM.
You're listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And thanks for your support.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY Allentown listener-supported community public radio.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse, where we're talking about Cedar Crest College and the things that are happening and catching up, what's been going on since President Carmen Ambar has been there. And now we're going to talk about something that was in their strategic initiatives. If you were with us for this last section, we were talking about how they've really worked their strategic plan. And one of the items in there was to come up with a first-year seminar experience. I can't tell you enough about this. When Carmen and I met before the show tonight, she shared with me a book that was their read this year. And I'm going to let her introduce and talk about it, but I'm going to also interject some of my thoughts because I've read this book now, and it's extremely exciting, informative, and sad.
Yeah. So the first thing I'll say to the listeners is that if you've never been to an event on Cedar Crest campus, this is the one not to miss. So you should come to campus on April 7th at 7 p.m. and see Lima Gabawi, who chronicles her experience in the book Mighty Be Our Powers. She's a Nobel Peace Prize winner. And I just think it's going to be a compelling speaker for anyone who's in the audience that night. So one of our strategic planning initiatives was to create a first-year experience for our students. And for us, that included first-year seminars where students would take a course, 10 or 12 different courses on different topics, but would infuse women's leadership, global connectivity, civic engagement, all of our broad principles in that course. And part of that course is that everyone across campus reads a common book, so we're all on the same page.
And this is students, faculty,
alumni. Alumni, anybody who wants to our Board of Trustees gets the book. Everyone sort of gets this book. And so this year, the book is Mighty Be Our Powers by Lima Gabawi. And Lima Gabawi recounts the Civil War in Liberia and talks about the role that women play, but that she specifically plays in making that civil war be no more and to find peace. And her path is just an incredible path. And I think it's interesting for our students to read it because she starts her path about the same age that they are as the country becomes war-torn. So she's getting ready to sort of go on in her life. She's a young woman. The country falls into this deep civil war, and her plans of college and other things get derailed. And through that that derailment, she has many challenges in her life and things that befall her that seem unfair, but she contributes to as well in her own thinking. And she winds her way back through to ultimately be one of the primary figures that helps them come to a peaceful resolution of a devastating internal civil war.
As I was reading through it, I kept trying to imagine myself at that age and facing some of those things and then trying to pull myself back and getting perspective again. Very difficult to do.
I think that what'll be interesting is we're going to do a little bit different in the than the conversation that she has on campus, in that she's not going to do a huge formal public lecture. It's going to be a conversation between she and I that the audience will be able to observe and obviously ask her questions. Because I think that, you know, she's the type of person that you want to probe more deeply. And to have her spend too much of her time giving a public lecture will not give us enough time to probe her thoughts.
Yeah, for you that might not be aware of it, Libya is Africa's oldest republic, and it became better known in the 1990s for this long-running, and this is what Lehman talks about, long-running, really ruinous civil war. I mean, this is where we saw, you know, kids that are 9, 10 carrying guns and
right, and machetes and killing people, and yes.
And what it does to them in their later life, it's oh, it's
right, because she talks about the killing boys, those
yes, the boys, killing boys right.
that who are become a part of these Civil War sort of complexes where they have no oversight, they have no family. So young children, 10, 9, 8, 11, 12 years old, become these killers and are part of these squads. And she spends time, you know, when she writes about it, you have sympathy.
They're with her.
They're with, yeah. Yes. So you have sympathy for them, even as they become very violent in this aftermath. So I think she does a great job of giving you perspective about the Civil War. But I think the thing that's most interesting about it, and you and I talked about this, Ellie, is the role that women played in literally transforming this nation, and how little we know about it, and how
Absolutely.
Much this story is not told. And I think for our students, it is the sort of recognition of women's roles. You have conversations about, are women's successes celebrated? Do we have the space to talk about the role we play in these powerful moments in our history? And I think that will be a topic of conversation along with her personal journey.
Yeah, and when we say that, or when Carmen was saying that it was the women that did this, literally, it was through them combining as a sisterhood, sitting on the steps of where meetings were taken,
right.
going into a major field and having a sit-in for,
months.
Yeah.
That the president of the country would have to drive by and see these women in white, sitting there day after day after day after day, till their moral conscience could take it no more.
Right.
That's what it was. It was their moral conscience couldn't take it anymore. And then the scene that she describes where the feuding sides are in a building, you know, trying to hammer out this peace element. And one of the sides wants to break away and to forego this conversation. And so the women block the door and keep them from leaving and start to strip in order to prevent them. And one of the reasons why they do that is because it was a symbol in their country of horror to
right.
see the grandmother or the mother naked. And so in order to shame them from their desire to no longer be a part of the peace process, they began to strip. And they knew that they could not allow their mothers, their grandmothers, their senior elder women to do this. It forced them to remain in the peace process. It's one of the key moments in the book that ultimately leads to success.
Yeah. Now, even though we're telling you a lot of this, this book is still an excellent read, and I would suggest if you're interested. And what I found very fascinating, and Carmen and I were talking about this before the show, after I got done and I put down the book, I went immediately to the internet and I said, okay, let me see how this history is being played out, you know, because this is relatively recent
right?
history.
Right, no, and very recent. Yeah.
And I'm hoping that, you know, because of the women's efforts, that there's something in there. And as I was going and reading this, there were really no comments other than the election of a woman who became the president of Liberia.
Right.
Now, she was a part of this, but
right.
not a major
no,
part.
No, not a major part. She was kind of periphery, and she'd been
right.
in exile. And so
and she was sort of on the other side for
exactly
a while.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. And
well, it's interesting. So we had, the way we found out about this book was through a documentary called Pray the Devil Back to Hell, which was produced by Abigail Disney. And she came to our campus and got an honorary degree and was the Reimert Lecturer last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through that documentary that we heard about this story. And the reason why Abigail was so moved by this story is because she, too, felt that women were missing in these stories, and she couldn't believe someone told her this story. And she said, "Women did this, and I don't know about it."
Yeah.
And so it drove her to go to the country, interview people, and do this documentary. So I think we have some work to do, folks out there, around still making sure that women's voices are heard. And some people ask me sometimes, well, why do we have Women's History Month? Here we are in March, Women's History Month. It's because sometimes the contributions of women are not fully heard. And
they're not documented.
Yeah, they're not documented, right? And so this is an opportunity for anybody that doesn't know much about the history of Liberia and this important work that happened by these women. This is an important opportunity for you to get educated. But I also think to see yourselves in her, mm-hmm. To see a movement through an individual's eyes. You know, for our students, it's about seeing the difference that one person can make.
I was just going to say that the effort that can be multiplied.
That can be multiplied. And when we spend our time talking about women's leadership at Cedarcrest, and many of you know that that's a key part of our mission, that this is where women learn to lead, we want them to know that they can take on that role at an early age and that they can make a difference in the world. And that as wonderful as Lima Gabawa is, I think what they'll discover when they meet her is that she's really no different than they are.
Right.
And that whatever she's done in her life, that they can do too in whatever field they choose.
And, you know, you can struggle and come out of it and have a very positive impact.
I think that that was the key for me, that she's off a path of success, right? She's
right.
Not on that path for a very long time. Not
several
a year.
Children.
Yeah, several children. It's not like she's only off for a year.
You know?
There's a long time when she's not on the path to success. But she finds her way back, and she overcomes, and she becomes a very important figure in this country and in the movement. And I think that's a powerful lesson to our students, too.
Yeah. And in this current time with what's going on in Syria,
yes.
You know, I can't help but sort of make an equation that, you know, the boy, whatever, was it the boy?
The boy killers.
And the children running around without any family because their family's gone, and the 2 and 3 year old. Yeah.
Right.
It just is like, how do we do anything about this?
Right. Well, that's what I think has been so powerful about the documentary. What they've done with Pray the Devil Back to Hell is to take that documentary to many, many war torn countries and to take women's groups and to show them that documentary so they can see a pathway forward. Because sometimes, and I say this all the time, all of us need images. You know, there's a direct correlation between images and possibilities. Mm-hmm. And all of us need images to look to know that what we want to achieve is possible. And that's why we bring these incredible women to Cedarcrest campus, because we want them to see it's possible for you. And that's what taking that video to those women in Kosovo was about, for Abigail Disney. It's possible for you. And so I think that, you know, what we hope will happen on our campus is just another image for our students to let them know that what they want to achieve is possible. Here's somebody who's done it. You can do it, too.
Okay, now you have already screened this once. You're going to screen this again before she comes to visit.
We are going to screen it again. And what I would say to our listeners is that if you just want to call the president's office, 610-606-4612, we can let you know when the screening is. If you want to come to the event, she is on the front page of our website right now, cedarcrest.edu. In the slides, you'll see a picture of Lima Gabawa. You just click on there. You can register for the event, and you'll get your RSVP. I would tell you to do that quickly, because I'm sure that this is going to sell out. I'm sure that you're not going to be able to get a seat if you don't.
It's Monday, April 6th.
It's Monday, April 7th.
April 7th. I'm sorry.
April 7th at 7 p.m. in Samuel's Theater. And she will be there talking about her life experience.
Listeners, again, I can't express enough how much, I mean, Carmen gave me this book, and I think that night I started to sit down, and I was annoyed when I couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
You know, so I kept reading and reading. In fact, I put another book down just so I could finish this one. But it really, the ways the story is told, the information that you pick up, the what you see as far as the sisterhood and their faith and everything to try and get them through this is just incredible. So if you have a chance, pick up the book. If you have a chance to come over to Cedarcrest College and hear, see the film or see her, Lehman, that's great.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you all there, because I know she's going to be fabulous.
So what else is happening at Cedar Crest? I know there's other events going on.
There's always things going on at Cedar Crest. I would say that for those of you who are thinking about returning to college or getting a certificate or whatever it is that you're thinking about in that regard, on April 10th, we have an information session for SAGE. And so that's happening from 5:45 to 7 p.m. You can go to the sage.cedarcrest.edu website and RSVP there. So I certainly think you should come and do that. We have a great show happening in our theater department, Poor Lord Stories. That's going to be on April 24th and 25th at 2 and 8 p.m. and another one on that Sunday, the 27th at 2. So you can always go and check out a great show. We always want you to come on our campus for just, you know, to browse around, to come to our Rodale Aquatic Center and to swim. To go walk through our arboretum. You know, one of the things that's great about our campus is, I always say this about Cedar Crest campus, that if someone asks you to close your eyes and picture the perfect little college campus, that's what would come to your mind, right? This little bucolic little college with these wonderful trees, a park-like setting. And so it's just a great place to come and walk around. We welcome you to come on campus and to say hello and to see what's happening.
Okay. And there's an event coming up with the Women's Leadership Institute and
the
Chamber of Commerce.
There is. So we've been doing this. I think this is our third year. It is our third year.
Is it?
This is the third year.
Yes.
This is our third year. So we have the Lehigh Valley Women's Summit, and that's with Cedar Crest College, obviously, and then the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Women's Business Council and the Women's Leadership Council for the United Way. And we jointly get together and have this great summit. The guest sort of keynote speaker this year is Marlo Thomas. So that should be really great. And so you should save the date. It's going to be on June 3rd, which is a Tuesday, 2014. And remember, we start early in the morning, 7:30, with some breakfast and some things like that. And then multiple sessions that are kind of workshops that help you get going in a variety of areas. And we end at 3 p.m. So you should be getting your save the date cards and getting more information about that. But just right now, put in your calendar, block it out. Don't do anything else but come to Cedar Crest on June 3rd, 2014.
And for those listeners who didn't realize, and I didn't until I got the postcard, Marlo Thomas has written a book, It Ain't Over Yet, and it's really about women who, over the years, have reinvented themselves, and fantastic stories about various women and how they've come back and done things differently. So again, the Women's Summit, the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce, Cedar Crest College, and Women's Leadership Institute through United Ways Group.
Right.
Terrific. Okay, listeners, we've had a pretty full program talking about Cedar Crest. Is there any one thing that you would, besides Lima coming to town, that you would like our listeners to keep in mind, to remember, to share?
I think that what I would say about Cedar Crest is that we are a college that is deeply committed to this community, and we want to ensure that our three cities in the Lehigh Valley are successful. And we believe that part of that success is to have a thriving and vibrant women's college that's committed to this community. And so when you think about programs and initiatives that you think we might pursue, feel free to reach out to us. We're always open to new ideas. But more importantly, that you think about sending as many young women as you can think of who might be interested in our experience there. And of course, our adult programs and for young men, and even 18-year-old men can come to our SAGE program. So we hope to continue to be a thriving and vibrant presence here in the Valley. And we appreciate all the service that folks give to the college when they host our students in a variety of ways. And we're continuing to try to do the Valley proud.
Well, and you have. I mean, the recognition from Cedar Crest is great. Listeners, thanks for joining us this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY 88.1 FM. This wraps up the business focus. Stay tuned, because Celtic Fair is up next. And again, happy spring, and let's just hope that it sticks.
Let's hope so. No more snow. We're done.